Thank you for listening, but please be advised that I don't just believe shit I hear in podcasts, and I don't want you to do so either. Be skeptical and look into things for yourself. If you find that I was wrong about something, the best thing you can do for me is to let me know. You can do that at livingthroughextinction@gmail.com. Please also be aware of the fact that I do swear, and today the word penis is said quite a lot. So listener discretion is advised. Ruby, and this is episode 92 of Living Through Extinction, a short to the point podcast with science and skepticism, environment and wildlife, and stuff I find cool that I want to learn more about. It's Sexual Health Awareness Month, so today I talk about the passing of sex guru Sue Johansson, eco and body friendly sex play, non-straight behavior in the animal kingdom, and three studies that revolve around the human penis. If you've joined me before, then thank you so much for returning. I really do appreciate you. If this is your first time listening to Living Through Extinction, welcome! I hope you find it both fun and informative. And if you're interested in supporting the show, all the possible ways are listed after the final segment and thank yous. I couldn't let Sexual Health Awareness Month go by without acknowledging the passing of Sue Johansson, the Canadian whose life's mission was to encourage well-informed, safe sex positivity. Sue followed scientific skepticism her entire life. It didn't matter what the government and/or church tried to convince her of. She always understood the truth of things and stayed based in reality. Sex wasn't sinful. It was natural and could even be healthy. That was where the science pointed, and she stuck to those facts, even when people all around her believed otherwise. Born in Toronto, Sue trained as a nurse right here in Winnipeg. She was trained by nuns, however, who refused to speak about anything sexual. Understanding that sexual health is, in fact, a part of overall health, Sue didn't feel right about the way it was addressed by the nuns. Their behavior stayed with her and contributed to her determination to be open, honest, and non-judgmental when it came to those topics the nuns wouldn't talk about. In the 1970s, one of her daughter's friends confided in her about a pregnancy scare. She advised and helped the friend, and it made her realize that there was a need for sexual education among the local youth. So she took it upon herself to rectify this, opening a birth control clinic in a Toronto high school, which she ran for almost 20 years. After this, she continued her education in human sexuality and counseling specifically, but never did earn full degrees in them. She entered all of our lives in the 80s with a Sunday night sex show on the radio. With Sue, callers could be confident there would be no judgment. They knew she would never be condescending to them or speak disapprovingly to them. They could ask about fetishes, masturbation, positions, where to touch, what to use, whatever. It didn't matter if the question was related to straight sex, gay sex, group sex, self-sex. She would take the question seriously and answer honestly. She was the best. She said the real words, the words other shows would shy away from at the time, such as penis, clitoris, anus, or orgasm. She spoke about the use of lubricants and toys very matter-of-factly, though she was a hoot at times as well. She was known for saying, "Sex will be sweeter if you wrap your peter." Also, if you want a good giggle, go look up video of her demonstrating a condom. She was a fun sexpert for sure. Sue Johansson did the work where the government refused to. When the government refused to educate people properly on AIDS, she made that education a huge part of her content. When sexual health-related topics were not being covered in schools, she was sure to include them to make sure the information got out there. In 2001, the government acknowledged her contributions, and Sue Johansson was appointed to the Order of Canada for being a strong, successful advocate for sex education. Sue, who made it clear that she regarded sex as a gift from God and nothing to be ashamed of, went from radio to television, taking calls of all kinds through the years. She even had a spin-off in the US for a time called Talk Sex with Sue Johansson. But she was much more than just a broadcaster. She was a mother of three. She wrote for a magazine column. For a time, she was giving lectures at schools and colleges three or more times per week. She wrote three books: Sex, Sex, and More Sex, Sex is Perfectly Natural, but Not Naturally Perfect, and Talk Sex, Answers to Questions You Can't Ask Your Parents. Toy companies saw how Canadians were listening to her and began sending her their products to review. She would pass them out to her crew to try out and report on. When she brought some of these devices on the Conan O'Brien show, he jokingly called her a perverted MacGyver. After spending the great majority of her elder years helping and educating those who needed her, Sue passed away in a long-term care home in Ontario with her family by her side on June 28th. To learn more about Canadian National Treasure Sue Johansson, watch the 2022 documentary, Sex with Sue. And when it comes to your sexual health, please remember to be skeptical, damn it. The environment probably isn't one of the things on most people's minds when getting sexy, but there is such a thing as environmentally friendly sex play. The most commonly used materials in traditional sex toys are polyvinyl chloride, trimethylton chloride, and phthalates. All are known reproductive hazards when they break down and get into the environment, particularly for pregnant and breastfeeding folk. All can have neurological effects on adults. Phthalates, in particular, have been linked to endocrine disruption. A sustainable, healthy toy will contain no chemicals which are a danger to human or environmental health. It will not cause irritation, bacteria won't linger on the material, and it can be safely disinfected in seconds. It should also be packaged and shipped in the most ecological ways available. And when it comes to your lube, stick to a water-based one every time. It's just as effective, less harmful, and safer for those with allergies. It's a no-brainer. The Natural Love Company says its passion is equal parts sex and sustainability, so you might want to check them out. They say that they sell toys that last and that they come in plastic-free packaging. A company called Belissa also claims to sell eco-friendly toys, so check them out too. I did find a collection of specific products at sustainablykindliving.com, which you may find of interest. I won't be talking about what each one does, just its ecological benefits. You can enjoy looking into the uses yourselves via Google if you want to. I have to admit, one of these was a new discovery for me. I may have a purchase in my future. Starting with the Womanizer. This one claims to be made from Bioline, a bioplastic which is both biodegradable and recyclable. The Lovability says it's made from high-impact recyclable styrene. The Gaia is apparently made from a product called Biofeel. This material is synthesized from raw vegetable material and is supposed to be 100% biodegradable and compostable. The Enjoy advertises that it is made from high-quality stainless steel, as does Lewand. The Glass, that's with one S, says it's made from borosilicate glass, which is produced with the use of naturally abundant materials. And the Meal, I don't know if I'm saying that right, M-E-I-L-E. The Meal claims to be made from recycled aluminum and silicone, and it comes in a sustainable bamboo fabric bag. There are options which are better in the long run for overall human and environmental health. When you're looking to make that next big toy purchase, maybe take a look at some of these and see if there are more environmentally responsible options for what you're interested in. Gay people haven't always terrified insecure straight men. Same-sex and bisexual behavior was seen as all part of a good time among many in ancient society. Then came the Judeo-Christian religions, and with them, leaders who were insecure about their own straightness and hence feared the gay men and their freedom to live happily. And so these scared, insecure straight men made laws about how everyone behaves in the privacy of their own bedrooms. When laws are made to attack a demographic of people, there is always a way that it can be used against those it was never meant for. I guarantee that cis straight couples were having anal sex when sodomy was first put on the books, and the entire time it was illegal in the US. Georgia successfully prosecuted a man with this law in 1986, and the Supreme Court did not force it out with the recognition of how unconstitutional it is until 2003. I'm sure today's new corrupt court will get to reversing that eventually, along with all other constitutional rights. Plenty of cis straight couples have anal sex. They did before it was legal, and they do now. This is the kind of thing which should be none of the government's business. Period. People who have stood against the LGBTQIA community over the centuries have used all sorts of excuses for their assholery. But as time moves on, and we've become more educated on our minds and bodies and nature itself, those excuses keep getting trashed. Sometimes they're trashed with basic common sense, and so what they do is they move the goalpost. The reason they had to stoop to the outright lying that they do today about grooming and child abuse is that they don't have any excuses left. They have all been thoroughly shot down. For example, many, even today, like to say, gay couples can't make babies. Many straight men and women can't make babies either. Do we deny them happiness and love? Nope. Also, with today's overpopulation issues, why is this a problem exactly? Gay couples are more likely to adopt a child who would otherwise not have a family. Gay couples literally help solve a major problem in our society. It's a total no-brainer unless you're looking for a reason to be discriminatory. But once you shoot that down, the same person will go, "Oh yeah? Well, I thought you believed in evolution. How does homosexuality progress the human race?" So that's an example of moving the goalpost. But to answer anyway, for one, it doesn't have to. According to Robin Dunbar, professor of evolutionary psychology at the University of Liverpool, homosexuality does not have to have a specific function, or any function at all. It could just be a spin-off or a byproduct of something else, like lots of our genetic information. People who try this argument are completely ignorant on what evolution actually is and how it actually works. But once you shoot that down, the same person will then go, "Oh yeah? Well, God says love is between a man and a woman." That's moving the goalpost again. This is a favorite distraction technique of Republicans and conservatives. Never let them do that. Always insist that they finish addressing the initial subject before agreeing to address the new one they're trying to throw at you. If they can't concede their first argument was invalid, then don't waste your time with their second. They are not arguing honestly. Also, what a God says determines how its followers are supposed to behave. It doesn't determine how others behave. Have any of y'all read the Bible? Because he isn't the God of everyone. He's the God of a very specific group of people. And not only that, but the great majority of Christians worldwide do not hold these bigoted beliefs. So who's right? Personally, I believe neither, as I don't believe in any gods. But I definitely stand by those Christians who do not hold bigotry as a part of their religious right. If they are fine with allowing people different from them the same rights and privileges, then their personal beliefs don't matter to me. They're on the right side of humanity, and as a humanist, that's what really matters. Anyway, today I'm focusing on the whole, if it was natural, it would be found in nature argument. While this was debunked ages ago, we still see the odd closed-off Christian group that still thinks of it as a gotcha, that still claims there's no gay behavior in animals. I loved it when they would call into the Atheist Experience and Matt Dillahunty would destroy them with basic facts. I miss Matt. 13th century philosopher and priest Thomas Aquinas famously stated that homosexual behavior in humans was obviously wrong because it didn't happen with animals. He saw humans as having fallen from our, quote, state of animal grace into the world of human corruption, unquote. To him, animals were untainted, and it was just humans who had strayed to what he thought of as unnatural practices. These people are still out there. So today I'm going to go over a few animals from a few different classes, which one can state to shut that shit down if they run into this kind of ignorance. Throughout history, scientists were persecuted for trying to point out facts that people weren't yet ready to accept. The reason it took so long for us to see the gay behavior in the animals all around us is that, one, most weren't looking for it, and two, those who did notice something would be chastised severely if they ever said anything out loud, or if they dared to include it in their paper. When someone did notice it during a study, they would be very nervous about including that piece of information in their writings. This kind of suppression is directly related to the Judeo-Christian religions. This kind of suppression does not lead to the truth. Those who did dare to study these things had to word their titles very carefully to avoid being berated. They had to make it seem like they believed they were studying a sort of depravity. For example, a 1922 study on baboons that was titled Disturbances of the Sexual Sense, and another one from 1987 which studied butterflies called A Note on the Apparent Lowering of Moral Standards in the Lepidoptera. If the truth bothers you, then you are the one with the problem. But if the truth bothers you and you have the power to demonize it so anyone who thinks about looking into it would be too afraid, it becomes everyone's problem. The truth is, those who spent their lives educating themselves on and studying these things, zoologists, say it's perfectly common in the animal kingdom. Whether you like it or not, it just is. In fact, Peter Bweckmann, academic advisor for the Against Nature's Order? Exhibition at the Norwegian Natural History Museum, calls it a highly essential behavior in the lives of a number of species. Same-sex behaviors are observed today in over 1,500 birds, insects, reptiles, and mammals, and that's just what's been definitively observed. Male chimpanzees practice sociosexual behavior, part of which is pleasuring each other sexually in order to make up after a fight. Sociosexual behavior is not about sexual preference as much as community and relationships. This is also common in lions. Males leading a pride together will have sex to ensure loyalty and to strengthen their bonds with each other. More common in other same-sex practicing animals is same-sex behavior due to attraction, or just because it's fun and feels good. Starting with something super small and outside of most our understanding, some snail species are only born as males. When two of these males get together, one of them will change their sex to female and may stay that way. But males, when seeking a mate and presented with a male and a female, will not tend to go for the one that's already female. Given the choice, they prefer other males. When it was first discovered that male beetles would have sex with each other, the Judeo-Christian mindset forced the hypothesis that it had to be rape or some form of dominance. Of course, when the first scientists said out loud what many saw as plain fact, suggesting that they were simply doing it because they enjoyed it, he was scolded by his colleagues. We only put limits on science when we do not want to know what it will tell us. It's hiding from the truth, and it changes nothing in reality. They were allowing their feelings to affect their work, and so not practicing scientific skepticism in their studies. Getting a bit larger and into the reptile family, some male garter snakes use pheromones to encourage courtship from other males instead of females. Among many birds which mate for life, 4-5% of these lifelong mates are homosexual couples. It's not only accepted, but single females will lay their eggs in the nest of a pair of males for them to raise as their own. And here's the kicker. According to what's been observed, the gay couple's actually better at the whole child-rearing thing than the straight pairs. Also, it's kind of like the female is saying, motherhood's going to be too hard without a mate. Who can I pawn these eggs off on? Hey, there's a couple who can't have chicks of their own. I'll just lay them there. It's kind of awesome. The male couple get to have the babies, and the single female gets to continue with her carefree life. If you think 4-5% is high, take a look at blue-headed gulls. Every 10th pair you see is a lesbian couple. They go to males for mating purposes only, and all the rest of their lives are spent with their female partner. With albatross nests, 1/3 are female pairs. That's 34%. Stepping aside from birds for a moment, one of the largest percentages I found was in one of the largest animals, giraffes. 9 out of 10 pairings of giraffes occur between males. Anyway, female macaques have frequently been observed having sex with each other, and there are male ostriches which will only court other males. Gay activity in nature is all over the world. Homosexual flamingo couples mate, build nests, and sometimes raise foster chicks. It's almost like in nature, the gay couples are serving the purpose of helping to ensure otherwise parentless chicks survive to adulthood, right? Too cool! Penguins are frequently gay or bisexual. When the first recorded observation of gay penguin activity occurred in 1911, the explorer described it as depraved behavior due to his own ignorance. Two male penguins at a Dutch zoo wanted to raise chicks together so badly that one year they stole an egg from a hetero couple. Then, the year after that, they stole an egg from a lesbian couple. A male couple at the New York Central Park Zoo, named Roy and Silo, were together for 6 years. They had sex with each other, and when potential female mates were presented, they were ignored. This male couple displayed all the pair bonding behaviors of a hetero couple. They would entwine their necks, preen each other, flop their flippers at each other, and more. For this next one, I can't say for sure if this is the same penguin couple or a different male penguin couple at the same zoo. But in 2000, a pair of bonded male chinstrap penguins were given an egg to foster and raised the chick as their own. Some birds even practice polyamory, and it's been observed that the higher the number of parents for each offspring increases survivability of the babies. Waterfowl and gray-legged geese have been observed in these family formats. Moving on to mammals, first the ocean. When it comes to dolphins and killer whales, apparently male and female pairings are actually rare. Yet when two males get together, they can end up staying together for years. Coming back to land, homosexual behavior in goats is common, particularly during mating season. One study was done on goats that has shown that, interestingly, the testosterone concentrations appear to be unrelated to the homosexual behavior. When a mammalogist noticed frequent homosexual behavior in bighorn sheep in the 60s, he avoided publishing his findings because they, quote, made him cringe, unquote. That is bad science. One's feelings have nothing to do with results. Years later, he finally relented and admitted that the rams he had studied had essentially lived in a homosexual society. Moving on to apes, one of our closest relatives is the dwarf chimpanzee, and that entire species has shown itself to be bisexual. Nearly all bonobos appear to be bisexual, and 75% of the sex they have is non-reproductive. They do it because they enjoy it, and nobody has put the bullshit lie of sin in their heads like many of us humans. And one cannot say that bonobos are without moral understanding. They will kick out members of their tribe who steal food or do other unacceptable things. Yet no bonobo is kicked out for being gay or enjoying sex, because being gay and enjoying sex does nothing to hurt other members of the tribe. Just like with humans. Love, sex, and bonding for life between same-sex couples is completely normal in nature. It is us, with our patriarchal Judeo-Christian theocracies, who put this unnatural limitation on what sexual activities consenting adults can and can't enjoy. Natural would be letting people be who they are. Natural is being with someone of the same sex if that's who you fall in love with. Unnatural would be to suppress those things. You know what else Christians see as unnatural and yet occurs all over the animal kingdom? Masturbation. Another perfectly natural, pleasant activity that they want to take away from us. That they want to convince us is wrong for whatever reason. Masturbation has been observed in primates, killer whales, deer, and penguins. It occurs with both males and females of the animal kingdom. The ocean animals will rub against stones and roots. Orangutans even make dildos out of wood and bark. You can learn more about this with a visit to the Norwegian Natural History Museum. It's all perfectly natural, yet these pathetic, insecure, straight men are so fucking terrified of the existence of anyone on the rainbow spectrum that they are willing to bring on the next Nazi regime in order to push them all back in the closet where they can live their lives in misery. Grow the fuck up. Stop lying. Accept that they exist and let them fucking be already. I have three dick studies today. Last year, Sexual Health Month was all about vaginas, vulvas, and clits. So this year, each September episode will have some dick shit in it. I like to finish off on a not negative note, so I'm saving the positive and funny ones for the end. That leaves just one study to go first with. The one that shows us men's penises may be getting longer. And no, from a men's health perspective, this is not a good thing. When going into the study, the hypothesis was that the length of the penises was probably getting shorter. This was hypothesized based on a 29-year study period, which showed a 1.2% per year drop in average sperm counts, and then later studies, which showed that by 2018, decline had increased to 2.6% per year. So that means the issue is accelerating, kind of like climate change. Now there's an interesting correlation, don't you think? Testosterone has also been going down at a rate of 1% per year since the 80s. Anyway, researchers figured that length of penis was likely correlated with those two things and would also be decreasing at a steady rate. It turns out they were wrong. The study, published in the World Journal of Men's Health, compiled data from 75 studies which ranged from 1942 to 2021 and consisted of 55,761 participants. It was determined that in the last 29 years, the average erect length of a penis has increased by 24%, and this trend is occurring all over the planet. Figuring out why will obviously take a whole nother study, maybe several, but ideas are revolving around environmental factors. We know that there are endocrine-disrupting chemicals in our environment. I've talked about them and the results we've seen on marine life in a few episodes. It may be that the levels have finally reached a point where they're going to begin having noticeable effects on humans as well. It could be from the particulates in the air, pesticides, or even our precious hygiene products interacting with our hormonal systems. It's also in the food we eat, particularly the food that comes from the ocean. Professionals in reproductive health studies say this is a huge change for such a short period of time. Learning the cause could be very important to our future, and they are encouraging that the data be confirmed and the causes researched. Moving on to a study with results more on the positive side of things, we have artificial penis tissue restoring erections in pigs with penis injuries. If you or someone you know suffers from a penile injury, you're probably aware how big this news is going to be for some. As a result of a physical injury or an autoimmune disease, scar tissue can build up on the tunica albuginea, or TA. I'm going to use TA going forward, and you're probably going to hear it a lot. The TA is the layer of connective tissue that fills with blood during an erection. The wavy fiber structure of the TA straightens and stiffens to help it to remain firm while engorged. This painful scarring of the TA is known as Peyronie's disease. It can cause a curving of the penis and can make getting an erection very painful and thus difficult to maintain. Researchers at the South China University of Technology have come up with an artificial penis tissue which is restoring erections in pigs, and hopefully people will be next. They used isotropic polyvinyl alcohol gel to create an artificial TA with a curled fiber structure similar to the waviness of the natural TA. It's been tested on Bama miniature pigs with penis injuries to their TA. Their material is matching the biomechanical properties of the natural material better than any biological tissues used today. Once it was determined to be safe for the body, they began their medical research with the pigs. 1 month later, and there was no rejection, and the pigs were once again reaching full erection. What they're now accomplishing in pigs could one day help millions of people with Peyronie's disease, which affects about 10% of penises in the US. There is no cure, and up to now, not a lot of treatment options. Traditional treatment involves surgery. The built-up scar tissue is removed and replaced with tissue from a donor, which could be an animal or another part of the patient's own body. Unfortunately, the treatment is rather inadequate. For some, the transplant areas will be rejected by the patient's immune system as not belonging. For all, the tissue being transplanted is not the same structure as the TA, so the function is not replicated by these patches, which means the pain part may have been taken care of, but reaching a full erection may become impossible altogether. Now that this one cause of erectile dysfunction has been figured out and possibly dealt with, researchers plan to look at many other causes and even at creating full artificial penises for replacement. This last one is kind of funny. At least, it will be to most women I know, and definitely a lot of men too. But it's kind of mean. For the purpose of the study, they had to lie to the subjects about what the average length of a penis is. They kind of had to for the study to work, though. Three researchers at the University College London tricked 200 men, manipulating how they thought about their own packages. Among other information provided, one group of men was told that the average size was much larger than normal, giving them the impression that they were below average. The other group of men was told that the average size was much smaller than normal, giving them the impression that they were above average. So, rather than measuring everyone's erect penis or having the men self-report, regardless of each man's size, they made sure to manipulate each man's perception of their size compared to others. It's a little mean, right? Then each of these men were given a series of questions to answer, many of which included desirability ratings for specific products. Buried among these questions was the desirability for a sports car. Yes, that's where this is going. Men with the perception that their penises were below average size were more likely to rate their desire for a sports car as high, particularly those over 30. Sure enough, if they received the falsely inflated number, which would make them feel like they were below average, their desire for a sports car was higher. As fun as the study is, I do have to mention that it is yet to be repeated and peer-reviewed. I'm done for today. Please consider subscribing to the YouTube for short weekly skeptical videos. Thank you for joining me. May your health and sanity continue to be replenished daily. My eternal gratitude goes out to the following people. Jason Martin for helping me get started on this project more than 3 years ago. I wouldn't be doing this right now if not for him. Kathy Rayner for her musical contribution on the violin. Paul Palmer for his musical contribution on the guitar. He can be found at WPG Suitcase Drummer on Instagram. Dustin Harder for composing and recording the intro and outro for the show. You can find him on Instagram at Prairie Soul Music. And of course, thank you to those who live with me and support me in all my endeavors. I hope you will choose to join me again in 2 weeks for episode 93 of Living Through Extinction. If you enjoy Living Through Extinction and would like to support the show, the best ways to do so are to subscribe and rate and to comment and like positive comments on your favorite podcast player. Or you can help out by following, liking, and sharing on all the social medias. The show can be found under Living Through Extinction on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, TikTok, and Threads, and under LTE Pod on Twitter and Hive. There's also a Patreon at patreon.com/livingthroughextinction. There you can earn stickers, pins, masks, and more, as well as help me to plant some trees. If you have any comments, corrections, questions, or suggestions, please email them to livingthroughextinction@gmail.com or message me through one of the social medias.